Gene App versus Harper Crest. Mr. Doak.
May it please the court, my name is John Doak, and I represent the appellant Susan Gienapp in this case. This case is one where we're asking the court to reverse the summary judgment granted in favor of the defendants on this FMLA case. Just a key portion of the facts that I think I need to highlight in order to run through my scenario with the law is that Ms. Gienapp's daughter, Trish Hoff, was an adult living out of town, and had thyroid cancer, which was terminal, and had gone into her lungs, metastasized. There was no doubt that at some point Ms. Gienapp was going to take a leave. She got a call in January about an emergency situation where the radiation for the thyroid had burned 83% of her daughter's lungs. She was in critical condition in the hospital.
Has she died?
She has not. This is the most astonishing and miraculous part of this.
It's
the
best news we've heard about this case.
Yes. So Ms. Gienapp immediately asked Ms. Chaddick, the employer, the CEO essentially, for the time off, and she was told, certainly, understand, make sure you're back in 12 weeks. Subsequently, it was determined that there needed to be the certification form. The certification form was transferred and came back, and that is essentially where this issue arises as to the consternation about that form. Now, the form itself was filled out and returned, and the section that's at issue is in Section 2, the employee's section, where she fills out the care she's going to provide in the estimated time, and she provided the type of care she was going to provide but left the time blank. It's our position that that does not make this a failure to provide adequate notice case, as was the rationale for the district court in granting summary judgment to the defendants. Our position on...
What is your position with regard to this deposition by a member of the board of directors who said that a decision had been made to fire all the managers?
All the assistant managers.
Or all the assistant managers?
Correct. My client was a manager.
Pardon?
She was a manager. She was not an assistant manager. So her position was not going to be eliminated through this round of the layoffs. In fact, it was her assistant who was going to
be eliminated. Okay, they talk about replacing all the managers, but you're saying they really meant just assistant managers?
Right. The assistants in all of the departments would be let go. The department heads were to remain. And my client had an assistant who had turned in her resignation, and knowing that this was coming, but then decided to stay for a period of time, and then she couldn't hold on any longer, and so she left. So during my client's vacancy, there was no one in the department because she was the manager and the assistant manager was gone as well. Mm-hmm. So the issue really becomes one of notice. We believe the trial court erred in finding that it was my client's obligation under the law to put the duration of her time as part of her notice. It's our position that under the FMLA framework...
Well, it's on the form, of course.
Yes, it is on the form, and that plays in at a later date. The rubric of the law is the employee only needs to mention a need for time off related to the medical portion. That puts the employer on notice. The employer then has to obtain the information and can request the certification form, which was, in fact, requested. It's our position...
Well, I don't understand. The form says, describe care you will provide to your family member and estimate leave needed to provide care.
Right.
So she answered the first part about the care needed, but not about the leave needed.
Exactly. And we... there's... That's part of the law. The law says under Kaufman, versus Federal Express, this court's case from 2005, that if there is an incomplete form, and in that case they talked about a failure to include duration in that form, means that under section the Code of Federal Regulations, 29 CFR 825.305, then it is the employer's obligation to notify in writing of that deficiency. Here the employer did not notify in writing, never discussed a deficiency. In fact, never told my client whether or not it was, after it was turned in, whether it was approved or not approved, which we believe is also a violation of the FMLA under Section 303. They simply put it in the notes, and she said, well, I was going to try and honor it, but then when another employee came along to replace, well, I guess I'll replace her because I can't honor this thing where the doctor said that it may take up to 6 months. Now, the district court agreed that that six-month provision was not something that they should have anticipated or taken into effect. He simply said, and we believe wrong, that our client had an obligation to say what the duration was because they had asked for it in the form.
Mr. Doak, as I understand your position, it is that the district judge, in relying on language in Rigi,
right,
in essence just disregarded the language in Section 825.305 about incomplete certifications, where the obligation lay there.
Exactly.
Did the plaintiff ever receive, is there any evidence the plaintiff received a request for more information as Mr. Rigi did?
No. In fact, it's undisputed in the record, there was only one conversation between Ms. Chaddock, the CEO, and my client, and that was in that time frame right before she came back. It's a little bit disputed as to whether it was 1 week or 14 days.
There was no response to the certification form as incomplete.
Right. The employer never sent anything saying certification form is incomplete, and there were no other follow-ups to say, even verbally, we need more information, or you didn't supply this, or you didn't supply the other thing. Now, we're not trying to say even that we believe the law says it has to be in writing to say that it's incomplete and we need additional information, but in this case, there's nothing even verbal to indicate that there was anything. In essence,
Ms. Chaddock testified pretty clearly that she never imposed a deadline.
That's correct.
Other than the 12 weeks.
Other than the 12 weeks at the time in January when Ms. Gienapp went to attend to her daughter.
And yet she fired her, according to her testimony, on February 23rd.
Right. And it's our belief that what she essentially did when she saw the form, and I think it's almost direct from her testimony, is she decided, well, I guess I can't accommodate something that long, so I'm not going to terminate her. I'll just put her under a layoff status, and I'll hire someone else. Again, you can always hire someone else temporarily in the FMLA situation, but my client would have the right to job reinstatement in that instance. The flip side of that is this argument about key employee and whether or not my client is or is not. It doesn't matter. The Code of Federal Regulations say if there's a key employee, they have to be notified in writing at the time that they request FMLA, and in order to terminate their ability to get job reinstatement, you have to give them a deadline in writing to say, okay, you're a key employee, you're entitled to leave, but we can't hold on beyond a certain date. Return by this date or you lose your reinstatement rights. That
how
never
long,
happened.
How long after the after this form was filled out, on February?
I believe that's February 2nd.
How long after that did Ms. Chaddock basically offer Gienapp's job to someone else?
I believe it was within a couple of weeks. And then the person started
so
a couple of weeks
well
after that.
Well short of the 12 weeks.
Right. Very short.
That was the February 23rd, right?
Right.
It's about 6 weeks in.
Yes.
Is that right?
Yep.
And then the woman had started a few weeks later, but well before April 1st, right?
That's correct.
Okay.
Yep. I see that I'm cutting into my rebuttal time, so I'll reserve that for the rest.
Okay,
thank
great.
You.
Thank you, Mr. Doak. Mr. Ballard? Mr. Ballard, sorry.
Good morning, judges. If it pleases the court, counsel, my name is Steve Balow, and I represent the defendants' appellees. I'm not going to use a lot of time making argument, just to point out that there is really no dispute as to the facts, but there does seem to be a bit of a spin. The certification was returned, although requested, on or near January 12th, and not returned until sometime during the first week of February. And that section on duration of leave was left blank, but there is a comment from the treating physician that it may require up to July 31st of the same year, six and a half months.
Let me ask you a question about that. First of all, did your client ever indicate that the certification was incomplete?
They did not. They granted the leave.
Right. Okay. And your defense on this notice then seems to turn on Ms. Chaddock's reading of the physician's comment that the daughter would need care for 4 to 6 months. Obviously, that's kind of a guesstimate. And your argument, though, seems to me to say, to depend upon saying that Chaddock could definitively read that certification as saying, I won't be returning until the end of July.
Well, and we are, because this is summary judgment, we are constrained to only those facts that are not in dispute. And there is a factual record regarding
that. I don't see that as an answer to
my concern is that the district judge said that foundation for your argument is unreasonable, that that's not a reasonable way to read this certification,
but
as a request for 6 months of leave.
But then turned around and said that that being the only information that the employer had, and there being a statutory and regulatory obligation on the part of the employee where the amount of leave necessary is not foreseeable, which is the case here, to provide the expected duration of the leave as soon as is practical.
Okay. So how does that reconcile that with Section 825.305 of the regulations, which says if the certification is incomplete, it's up to the employer to ask in writing for the employee to complete it?
Because the employer did not treat it as incomplete at that time.
No, but you're overreading what the medical response is on the form. When he says care in the period of incapacity is February 1st to July 31st, he is not directly addressing the question how much time GNAP is going to be out, right? That's just the care. It has to be provided by someone. But that doesn't mean that GNAP is going to sacrifice her job in order to provide that care right through July 31st. So what Judge Hamilton was saying was the employer, since she didn't fill out, she didn't complete the estimated leave needed to provide care, he should have asked her.
And I don't think that we're ships passing in the night here. They didn't ask her at the time the form was returned, or they did ask her through her sister, and the answer was provided, we don't know yet.
Where do we have that in the evidence?
Through her sister.
Only through, well,
I don't understand
her,
you.
Her, well.
Why don't they ask her?
Because she was asked to stay in contact with the organization during her period of leave.
I don't understand you.
But she did through her sister. Her sister was also an employee.
She's not out of communication. All they had to do was call her and ask her for an estimate of how long she'd be out providing this care.
The record reveals that she generally, through her sister, also an employee, contacted the employer once a week and said, everything was the same, there's no change in status.
Well, did they ask her how long is this going to go on?
Yeah, well.
Yes or no?
Yes, but it's disputed.
What do you mean, yes, but it's disputed?
Well, the record says, yes, they did ask her, but that's a disputed issue.
You think it's yes?
It is yes, according to the defendants. But it is in a disputed writing, issue did they ever of fact.
Did they ever ask her in writing to complete the certification form?
Not in writing, no.
Okay. Okay.
I thought there was a question pending.
Well, let me skip ahead a little bit. As you know, the plaintiff moved for summary judgment in the district court and has suggested we should reverse and direct summary judgment in her favor. In your brief on appeal, I didn't see any indication of any disputed issues of fact that would be material to that.
There are disputed issues of material fact, but they go to both motions for summary judgment, i.e., the level and for example, Myra Chaddick testified that she had a conversation on the telephone with Susan Ganap in February of 2012, in which they discussed her expected return date. Susan Ganap, the plaintiff, denies that that conversation ever occurred.
How is that material to plaintiff's motion for summary judgment?
Well, that would certainly go to the request for further information.
Well, the regulations say you've got to be specific, it's got to be in writing, and you've told us there is no evidence of that.
There's no evidence of it having been in writing other than the certification form itself.
Right. Okay. Anything else that is in dispute?
There are disputes which are not material to the motions for summary judgment,
right,
about the conversation.
That happens all the time. Sometimes they're material, sometimes not. Any other material issues of fact?
I think that it is material that for 12 weeks she was having weekly contact with the employer, knew that her assistant had resigned, knew that a new person had been interviewed and hired, and didn't know or didn't say anything to the employer until the 10th or 12th week of her leave. While there may be this requirement for writing for an incomplete certification, certainly, as this court has said, both in the Reagy decision and Gilliam before it, you can't leave the employer in the dark.
No, but the employer has to ask what it wants, and that seems not to have happened here. Can I ask you about your alternate basis you suggested for affirming here? A situation like this, you've got two or more family members who might be entitled to FMLA leave.
Or that was the case here,
in a position to care for this deathly ill adult child.
Absolutely.
Is it your contention that the FMLA required Trisha's husband to use his FMLA leave before the plaintiff used hers?
It is my contention that under the regulations and the definition of the word child,
she's not a child.
She is not a child within the meaning of the FMLA.
Okay. Do you have any other rationale to support that contention?
Other than the statutory definition of the authority?
You've misread it. But
no, she's definitely a child.
Counsel, the statutory definition says that a child is, among other things, the biological child of someone. Is there any doubt that she is the biological child of Ganap?
That's correct, and I don't argue that, but it goes on to say, the authority goes on to say, the regulations go on to say, that when we're talking about an adult child who is no longer in loco parentis or is capable of self-care.
I have no idea where you're getting that from.
There is both authority and regulations in that regard.
The statute says that a child is a biological child or someone about whom the employee is in loco parentis.
Correct.
That is, it's a separate branch of the statute. Ganap is making a claim under the first branch of the statute, not the second branch of the statute.
But there is authority, in fact, cited in the brief. As a matter of fact, there's a survey of authority where it talks about an adult child capable of self-care.
You mean
for whom the parent is not entitled to FMLA.
So you think we should just ignore the statute? You don't have any explanation for how the statute can possibly bear the meaning you're giving to it.
Because that's what the regulations and the authority from this
court
say.
So in other words, you're asking us to ignore the statute.
Well, but the enabling regulations define the terms and apply them. why would...
No agency can tell courts to ignore statutes. Do you have some...
No, I am...
Do you have a semantic argument, or perhaps even an argument based on legislative history, for the proposition that the words of the statute don't mean what they appear to say?
The words of the statute mean exactly what they say, but is often the case, to affect the statute, there are public policy and practical concerns. And
to
in this case,
statute, we must rise above the statute and do something better.
Judge, I would never tell you that you have to
realize
regulation
Court,
over statute.
You realize the Supreme Court just this morning said 9-0. However stupid a statute seems to be, we cannot ignore it and do something better.
But the point is that the courts
of
this land, including this court,
stupid statutes is what the court
have
said.
Followed the regulations and adopted them and said that it does not include...
I just want to be clear. You are not giving us any semantic or any legislative history basis for taking your view of this statute.
Counsel, on a somewhat different note, I just wanted to ask you, you take the position in your brief that whether intentionally or not, the certification form was misleading because Ms. Genap didn't indicate she'd be taking care of the kids, right?
Well, the certification form indicates that she would be taking her to appointments and so forth
assist
and so on, and that was not the case.
Assist with all ADL care, providing all medication. That's what
right.
she wrote, right?
And we would not even suggest that there was anything intentional about her behavior.
Well, you suggested it, but since we're looking at the whole certification form, the last page signed by the healthcare provider asks about the care needed by the patient and says assistance with the ambulation and basic daily needs, assistance in caring for children. What's misleading about that?
Judge, her deposition testimony was that she cared for the children almost exclusively in order that the husband could care for his spouse.
That sounds to me like a good deal of spin on the actual testimony.
It may be, Judge, but...
But you're telling us that you all had no idea that she was going to be caring for the children. And that's why you're arguing the defense, that the district court summary judgment should be affirmed on alternative grounds because she wasn't actually using FMLA leave properly. She told you what it was going to include. And I would think that the daily activities of daily living for a mother of young children at home are going to include
absolutely,
care for her, right?
Absolutely, Judge.
So do you want to still stick with that argument?
I do, Judge, because I think we have a situation here where a small employer in a small town tried to do the right thing and found out later that it had been either through omission, unintentional, or affirmative misrepresentation, had been not given the full story.
Okay, well, thank you, Mr. Vallow. So, Mr. Doak, because you have any time left? Or a little bit.
May it please the Court, I'm just going to address a couple of very brief issues. First of all, in terms of the definition of the adult child, the statute and the regulations are very clear that it would apply to an adult child who is not capable of self-care. And we believe that the FMLA form signed by the doctor makes it very clear that she needs assistance with active daily living activities, transportation, clothing, feeding, things of that nature, which are all part of that, as well as under the ADA definitions that are inclusive with the FMLA, that all fits. The issue of the hiring of someone to fill in, that doesn't trigger any action by a person who's on FMLA unless there's a notice pursuant to a key employee exception, that person is replacing you, because you have the right under the FMLA, if you come back within your allotted time period, to bump that person out of the job or to be put in a position of similar responsibility. Finally, Section 300B and 300C of the Code of Federal Regulations that we've cited in our brief both required the written notices, the designation notice and the notice of rights. Neither of those happened. Section E says what the consequence is, and that consequence is an interference claim. And so we believe that once it's been shown that that did not happen and my client didn't get her job, that we should be entitled to summary judgment as a plaintiff under those circumstances. So that's all. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much, counsel. Next case for argument is...